Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 2nd, 2021. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Republican Representative Priscilla Giddings defiant in Idaho House Ethics Committee hearing on doxing alleged rape victim's name and photo. The alleged rape survivor is accusing a former Idaho representative from Lewiston of raping her in March while he was still in the legislature. Small fire Saturday afternoon along Moscow Pullman Highway threatened WSU buildings before firefighters put it out, and Oregon wildlife officials approved the killing of four wolves in eastern Oregon for cattle predation. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report, but first, world headlines. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. During a meeting of the Idaho House Ethics Committee today, Republican Representative Priscilla Giddings of Whitebird defended her decision to expose the name and photo of a 19-year-old alleged rape survivor known as Jane Doe on her Facebook page and in a weekly letter to constituents in March. Giddings said because there were no charges against Republican Representative Aaron Von Ellinger of Lewiston at the time of her posts, and still no pending charges at this time, the state's constitutional protections for crime victims are irrelevant to her case. The Ethics Committee heard testimony and witnesses today at the state capitol on two ethics complaints against Giddings, one for posting the identifying information on her Facebook page and including it in her weekly letter to constituents, and the other for misrepresenting her actions when testifying under oath during the Ethics Committee hearing on Republican Representative Aaron Von Ellinger of Lewiston and his conduct unbecoming of a state legislator. The alleged rape survivor testified at Von Ellinger's hearing in April from behind a screen set up in the Capitol's Lincoln Auditorium. The Boise Police Department is investigating Von Ellinger for rape, and he resigned from the legislature the day after the Ethics Committee voted unanimously to remove him from the House, pending a vote of the full House to do the same. When Giddings published the photo and name of the woman from a right-wing website, who others are identifying as Jane Doe, she wrote in her newsletter, "The ethics investigation against Von Ellinger was a blatant liberal smear job." In early May, after the ethics hearing in April in which Jane Doe testified behind a screen at the state capitol, Giddings announced a run for the Republican nomination for lieutenant governor, in which her opponent will be House Speaker Scott Bedke of Oakley. During her opening statement today, Giddings alluded the ethics complaints against her were politically motivated.
"These allegations are nothing more than crass attempts by my political opponents to take advantage of the woke cancel culture movement that wants to destroy Idahoans' individual rights for their own personal gain. Early in the morning on April 16th, House members were made aware that accusations against former Representative Von Ellinger were going to be made public. That afternoon, I saw a news article that only included information from the accuser's statement and failed to include details from the response to the complaint. Although I don't defend his lifestyle, I did and I still do defend his right to receive the presumption of innocence and equal treatment under the law rather than becoming a victim of the winds of a trial by public opinion. I called Von Ellinger's second lawyer, David Leroy, at 2:11 that afternoon and asked why Von Ellinger's response hadn't been publicly released as Rule 45 stipulates. I specifically asked him if he was going to redact the woman's name when he sent it out, and he said there was no legal requirement, especially since there were no charges filed, in which it is my understanding that there are still no filed charges. When I called him again at 2:47, he told me he had sent the response to the press. Shortly afterward, when I messaged Bill Spence of the Lewiston Tribune and asked him if he had received the response from David Leroy so that local media could present both sides of the issue, he responded that he had. Later that evening, I was sent a link to the Readout News article. After skimming through it, I copied the link in my Android browser and shared it on my Facebook page. I had no knowledge or control over the thumbnail image associated with the article. The next afternoon, when I finalized my weekly newsletter and sent it out, in the good, bad, and ugly section, I hyperlinked the same Readout News article. These two actions are the basis for the accusations against me. I combined these two hyperlinked events on one piece of paper, and copies are available for members of the audience to review. 3 days later, on April 19th, David Leroy sent out emails requesting destruction of all copies of the Von Ellinger response he sent out. It wasn't until April 28th, almost 2 weeks after the news article had been published, that this committee requested that the young woman's identity be protected. After that request, Readout News hid the woman's identity, and I deleted the entire post from my Facebook page. As for my testimony before this committee on April 28th, I stand by my statement that I posted a link to a news article, and that is not the same action as posting her name or a photo. A quick Google search or a tech-savvy teenager could help explain the difference. Furthermore, I regard this as irrelevant, as any information in the internet age which is publicly released must be considered to be in the public eye from then on. I am deeply concerned that the woke cancel culture has provoked a climate of mistruth and mob rule right here in Idaho. As a result, it is threatening Idahoans' First Amendment rights, as well as the presumption of innocence and the guarantees of equal treatment under the law that are enshrined in written and unwritten laws and traditions throughout our legal and justice systems. Due process is one of the most important elements of a just society. Countless dictatorships and oligarchies have written laws which are only meant to look good for public consumption, but are then twisted to serve the purpose of a domineering government. Anyone who grew up in the Cold War era should be terrified by the memories of the Iron Curtain and the mockery of justice their governments made as a matter of course. Now, in the Idaho House of Representatives, our legal process and traditions have been derailed, and instead of a presumption of innocence, any accused now seems to have a presumption of guilt and a burden of proof of innocence. The accused in this year's ethics proceedings have enjoyed no privacy, no protection from a trial by public opinion, while the accusers have received every protection and absolute partisan partiality from those processes which should have protected them. The accusers have been supported by public taxpayer money, while the accused are left to fend for themselves and indeed have worked against by taxpayer money. Among many questions I have for and about this proceeding, why is the committee's legal counsel a 20-year personal friend of Scott Bedke? Why was I never given a copy of any evidence against me? Why was I told I would only have a limited, I have not been given any additional proceedings for this morning? Why is it that Mr. Chair, when you say everything is confidential until the committee votes with probable cause, that somehow the information of this hearing was given to the media before it became public? This Ethics Committee's proceedings have failed to provide even a bare minimum of due process to any legislator who has been targeted or might yet be added to the list of the committee's victims, and essentially amounts to the imposition of an ex post facto law, something which, even in recent memory, no legislator would dare publicly support. Thomas Jefferson, who some on the committee have likely quoted favorably in the past, had this to say on the topic on his August 13, 1813 letter to Isaac McPherson. The sentiment that ex post facto laws are against natural right is so strong in the United States that few, if any, of the state constitutions have failed to prescribe them. The federal constitution indeed interdicts them in criminal cases only, but they are equally unjust in civil as in criminal cases, and the omission of a caution which would have been right does not justify the doing what is wrong, nor ought it to be presumed that the legislature meant to use a phrase in an unjustifiable sense, if by rules of a construction it can be ever strained to what is just. We must remember that historically the Ethics Committee has not been consistent about enforcing clear ethical violations. I did not commit adultery. I have not removed my opponent's campaign literature off of residential doorsteps and lied about it. I did not get caught in a high school girl's bathroom. I don't have a record of domestic assault and battery. I've never had a DUI, and I have never had accusations of pedophilia being filed against me. All of these are ethics violations that have occurred in the legislature in the few years previous, yet have not been acted on by an ethics committee. It appears ethical standards are now relative and are subject to interpretation and enforcement by anyone who can garner a simple majority in this body. In conclusion, the allegations against me are patently false, as is plain to every intelligent and honest person here. Throughout my entire life, from the Air Force Academy, to my combat service to this nation, to my membership in the legislature, I have always conducted myself according to the highest possible standard. The historical actions of the Ethics Committee shows its disregard for established constitutional rights, as well as its disregard for the House rules. It took action to expel a member without the prerequisite two-thirds approval. I believe that based on this committee's previous ethical inquest this year, that there is nothing that I can say or do that will affect the outcome of what I believe is a predetermined verdict. Therefore, I refuse to give this hearing unlimited time and resources. I will not be responsible for wasting any additional taxpayer dollars to prolong this politically motivated attack. Listeners should know that House Rule 45 does not require that I be in attendance here today, but I was served a subpoena by the chairman, who's appointed by Scott Becky, coincidentally, not only my accuser, but also my opponent in the race for lieutenant governor. The subpoena specifically states that I must appear as a testifying witness. So when Mr. Chair calls me back to appear as a testifying witness, I will respect the law. I will, however, defer any question that is a personal attack or designed to make this trial politically motivated. I will answer those by reference to this opening statement that I have always acted with the highest ethical moral intentions and truthfulness. I personally, my children, my husband, have all been threatened with physical harm as well as financial ruin and reputational defilement, and I will not subject myself to being lambasted by a series of hostile, politically motivated, irrelevant questions.
That was Republican Representative Priscilla Giddings of Whitebird at the Idaho House Ethics Committee meeting this morning. House Judiciary Rules and Administration Committee Chair Greg Cheney of Caldwell filed one of the complaints against Giddings and a group of 24 House members, including 16 Republicans and 8 Democrats, filed the other. Attorney Jeff Hepworth represented the 24 House members that filed one of the complaints.
We, the undersigned, hereby bring a complaint that Representative Priscilla Giddings has engaged in behavior unbecoming of a representative, which was detrimental to the dignity and integrity of the House as a legislative body, pursuant to House Rule 45-2BI. We believe two separate but related acts warrant your committee's investigation. First, Representative Giddings disseminated the identity and photo of a young lady State House intern, Jane Doe, who reported sexual assault by a representative on April 16, 2021. The identity and photo were embedded in defamatory writings she disseminated. She also appears to have made defamatory statements herself. She shared these writings through a Facebook post, which was disclosed the name and displayed a photo of the intern, and through her official government e-newsletter, which linked to an article with the photo. It is inappropriate to share the identity of a person who has reported sexual assault because it endangers that person and prevents other survivors from coming forward. Sexual harassment is a subset of sex discrimination made unlawful by 67-5909 Idaho Code. Therefore, the committee may find that such treatment by Representative Giddings amounts to retaliation against Jane Doe for raising a claim for sexual harassment, which is unlawful under 67-5911 Idaho Code. Representative Giddings' action raises additional concern when a sensitive ethics committee investigation is underway. The intimidating and bullying of the teenage witness by others could have threatened the integrity of the earlier investigation and certainly caused harm to the victim. Second, Representative Giddings appeared to misrepresent her actions to the Ethics and House Policy Committee while under oath. She was directly asked to confirm that she had posted a picture of Jane Doe. She responded, quote, "That is not correct," unquote. When pressed further by a committee member who pulled up her Facebook post and could see the photo, she feigned ignorance as to whether she had posted the image. When asked if she is the administrator of her Facebook account, she would not answer the question. Alternatively, the committee may find that Giddings' elusive answer was evidence of action giving rise to a determination that Representative Giddings should be held in contempt of the committee. Representative Giddings' conduct appears to be unbecoming a representative, which is detrimental to the integrity of the House as a legislative body. To maintain a safe workplace at the Idaho House of Representatives, we must be able to receive and respond to reports without interference. Additionally, people working at the State House must be able to report abuse without the threat of bullying, threats, or invasion of privacy. Representative Giddings' behavior invaded Jane Doe's privacy and threatened her safety. It also threatened the integrity of the investigation. Further, appearance of dishonesty while under oath was an affront to the House. We would appreciate your prompt attention to this matter. Sincerely, and the complaint is signed by Speaker of the House, Representative Scott Betke, Representative Steve Birch, Representative Matthew Matt Bundy, Majority Caucus Chair Representative Megan Blanksma, Representative Greg Cheney, Representative Marco Erickson, Representative Rod Furniss, Representative Brooke Green, Representative Linda Wright Hartgen, Representative Lori Lickley, Representative Chris Mathias, Representative Brandon Mitchell, Representative Colin Nash, Assistant Minority Leader Representative Lauren Necochea, Minority Leader Representative Ilana Rubel, Representative James Ruckty, Representative Scott Syme, Minority Caucus Chair Representative Sally Toon, Representative Carolyn Nielsen Troy, Representative John Vanderwood, Representative John Weber, Representative Fred Wood, Representative Julie Yamamoto, Representative Rick Youngblood. Accompanying the complaint were three exhibits. The first exhibit was the article from the American Redoubt. The second exhibit was a newsletter from Representative Giddings, which corroborates everything that is in the complaint. And the third document was a transcript of the improper testimony and dishonest testimony of Representative Giddings, which were provided to the committee.
That was Attorney Jeff Hepworth, who is representing 24 House members that filed one of the complaints against Republican Representative Priscilla Giddings of Whitebird. Later in the day today, an attorney questioned Democratic Representative Chris Mathias of Boise about his involvement in the ethics complaint against Giddings.
Yes, I signed on for obviously the reasons outlined in the complaint, but to be specific, there were four things that motivated me. The first is that I believe that Representative Giddings violated her oath that we take every morning during session on the House floor to pursue justice for all by publicly defaming and casting doubt upon people who report violent crimes. I think that undermines the pursuit of justice. It doesn't promote it. Secondly, I also think that Representative Giddings was negligent. I think she knew or should have known that that action would lead and cause direct harm to Jane Doe. I also think that any legislator who did their due diligence and read the full file during the former representative's hearing could not have concluded that Jane Doe's claim was baseless, especially considering that The former representative himself claimed that and admitted that there was a point during the interaction that he was out of control. I think, three, that Representative Giddings probably committed perjury by evading or lying as to whether she knew who committed.
Representative Mathias, we need you to stay away from any allegations of criminal activity or egregious behavior that would lead in that direction. Stick solely to the complaint, please.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And fourth, I believe that legislators have a heightened responsibility to demonstrate heightened, you know, information literacy skills. I think, you know, there's a lot of information out in the world, and we have a responsibility to know when we need to find it, know how to find it, know whether it is valid, how to consume it, and then how and whether to share it. And I think for people in positions of power and public influence, sharing blog posts in which an author has not fact-checked certain claims doesn't meet my personal standard of basic information literacy. And I think by doing that, we perpetuate the idea that anything we see on the internet is news. And to be frank, I think if we all did that, if we all shared everything we saw on the internet and even implied that it was, quote, news, I think, to be frank, that would make us all look like idiots. And I think that has the effect of reducing the perceived integrity of this body. So those were my reasons.
Thank you, Representative. And going back to your first reason, you mentioned a daily oath. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, every morning we take the pledge. I don't think I need to recite it, though I'd be happy to. But the pledge concludes with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And so you referenced Representative Giddings' social media activity. Are you familiar with Representative Giddings' Facebook page contents as it relates to the Von Ellinger hearing?
Yes.
And if you would turn in your binder to Exhibit 4, which is in Exhibit 3 for the committee. And if you would turn several pages to the posting from April 16th, and let me know when you're there.
I'm there.
Is this consistent, except redacted, from what you witnessed on Representative Giddings' Facebook page?
It seems so, yes.
And so when you accessed Representative Giddings' Facebook page, the Jane Doe from the Von Ellinger hearing, her picture was visible from her page. Is that correct?
Indeed.
And do you believe that that content is appropriate for a member of the House of Representatives to post on Facebook?
Negative.
And why is that?
For multiple reasons. One, anyone who is familiar with our criminal justice system, I have a degree in criminal justice, knows that victims of sexual assault are usually given the least amount of justice and fairness in our system, and I think many of us are committed to trying to remedy that, take steps to remedy that. One of the things that we can do, and that many of us do, is protect the identity of people who come forward to report allegations of sexual assault. I don't distinguish between making initial public revelations of identity from disseminating further that identity. The second reason is that, assuming for a moment that sharing that information was legitimate, which I don't think it was, to add declaratory statements of opinion to the dissemination would suggest that conclusions had been drawn about the validity of Jane Doe's claims. And as I mentioned earlier, legislators were privy to a comprehensive set of information prior and during the Von Ellinger hearing, including all of the transcripts from all of the in all of the investigations. And no one who did their due diligence could have concluded that Jane Doe's claim was baseless.
Understood. And so, Representative, is it fair to say that part of your concern with the social media posting was not just the posting itself, but perhaps the amplification of that information, the dissemination of that information?
I believe so, but I'll just be frank. I have concerns that when we say things on the internet that directly cause harm to others, that's not protected free speech, and I don't think we should engage in that kind of speech.
And that was Democratic Representative Chris Mathias of Boise speaking today at the Idaho House Ethics Committee hearing on the outing of Jane Doe's identity. Representative Priscilla Giddings, who is the focus of the Ethics Committee hearing, had the right to call witnesses and last week submitted a list of 11 witnesses she wanted to call and requested committee staff and their attorneys prepare subpoenas for all of them. The Idaho Press reports it took committee staff all day Friday to prepare the subpoenas, but Giddings never served the subpoenas and did not call any witnesses of her own today. The list of witnesses included House Speaker Scott Bedke, attorneys Bill Myers, David Leroy, and Brian Kane, and an Ada County Sheriff's deputy who responded to a 911 call Giddings made to express concern about a process server bringing a subpoena to her home. Giddings told the committee today, "It was my understanding since the committee served my subpoena that the committee would serve those subpoenas." Giddings then said, "I do not want to waste any more of the taxpayers' money, so I am done for today." She then left the room, and a handful of supporters applauded as she left. The committee will reconvene tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time, but will not take any more testimony. The committee plans to discuss the matter and then make a decision. The right-wing attempts to out the identity of Von Ellinger's accuser took an extreme turn just as Jane Doe concluded her testimony to the Ethics Committee in April at the state capitol. Idaho Public Television Network obtained security camera footage from the state capitol from hallways showing a small group of people hurrying while following the woman known as Jane Doe as she left the capitol. After her testimony from behind a set of screens for the Idaho House Ethics Committee, the 19-year-old Jane Doe has alleged 38-year-old Republican Representative Aaron Von Ellinger of Lewiston had unconsenting sex with her after a dinner date in early March in Boise. Doe reported the incident to legislative officials and also the Boise police. The Boise police is investigating Von Ellinger for rape. The day after Doe, Von Ellinger, and others testified to the House Ethics Committee, Von Ellinger resigned from the legislature. The hearing in April included testimony about Republican Representative Priscilla Giddings sharing the real name and photo of the alleged rape survivor on her Facebook page and in her weekly letter to constituents. Giddings said in her letter the allegations against Von Ellinger, quote, are straight out of the liberal playbook. They are a blatant liberal smear job. Far-right websites had published the woman's name and photo. Jane Doe testified the articles also contained lies about her. Shortly after the chair of the Ethics Committee dismissed witness Jane Doe, people in the Lincoln Auditorium could hear a yell coming from behind the screen. The security camera footage shows people chasing Doe down halls in the Capitol, and social media posts said that people were trying to photograph Jane Doe. The footage is timestamped 11:18 a.m. shortly after Doe finished her testimony. The Idaho public television show Idaho Reports blurred the face of Jane Doe in a still they published from the security footage. Cameras showed a small group of people leaving the Lincoln Auditorium immediately after the testimony, and in the hallway, the group quickened their pace as they got to a stairway. Idaho Reports said the security footage from various angles in the basement shows Jane Doe and her attorneys walking quickly through the hallway with attorney Annie Hightower holding an open umbrella in an attempt to shield Jane Doe from the cameras. There was a confrontation with the group of people in which reporter Emery Moore for Boise television station KBOI approached Jane Doe while filming and tried to ask her questions. Hightower said, We were followed by several individuals with cameras on her as she tried to run from folks. They were getting real close to her with their cameras. At one point, Jane Doe fell to the floor. The Idaho State Capitol Correspondents Association revoked the press credentials of reporter Emery Moore, and KBOI-TV said they have not published or aired any of the images of Jane Doe. Hightower said at one point her client fell to the floor. Idaho State Police arrived on the first floor and surrounded Doe as they escorted her to a car outside the Capitol. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Spectrum 2 Art and Dance Studios, specializing in art and dance classes for child
through adult. 525 South Main Street in Moscow. Information at 208-882-1445, UBU Dance Guru at msn.com, or spectrum2studio.com. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
Pullman fire officials say someone tossed a lit cigarette from a car at the intersection of the Pullman Highway and Terreview Drive Saturday and caused a fire that threatened buildings and burned more than a quarter acre of Washington State University and U.S. Department of Agriculture land. The Daily News reported wind blew the wildfire, but firefighters from the Pullman Fire Department and Whitman County Fire District 12 were able to control the fire in the 100-degree midday heat. The Leland Complex fire in eastern Latah County grew to 3,492 acres over the weekend and as of yesterday morning was 59% contained, down from the 67% containment reported during the week last week. The Dixie and Jumbo fires, about 40 miles southeast of Grangeville, are 12% contained as of this morning and have burned 42,751 acres. This morning's incident report says fire continues to burn in mixed conifer and lodgepole stands, with 40 to 60% standing dead in some stands. Old fire scars with heavy downed fuels are slowing the fire but are not a barrier to fire spread. At upper elevation, spruce and subalpine fir pockets allow spread through torching and spotting. The Lick Creek Fire, which has burned 80,400 acres in rural Assotin County and the Umatilla National Forest, is 90% contained as of this morning. The incident report issued this morning says scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms Saturday afternoon and evening brought rainfall amounts of up to 0.12 inch over Lick Creek and up to 0.05 inch over other areas, based on automated weather stations. Additional showers on Sunday brought rainfall amounts up to 0.06 inch over Lick Creek and up to 0.24 inch over Green Ridge. A thick cloud cover resulted in much cooler temperatures and higher humidities compared to the past several days. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department has approved a plan for a rancher to kill four uncollared wolves in Baker County because wildlife officials say wolves associated with a pack killed or hurt four cows between July 14th and 26th. Under Oregon wildlife rules, ranchers can kill wolves when non-lethal deterrents against wolf packs have not stopped repeated attacks on livestock. Wildlife officials say Oregon has 173 wolves in 22 packs. Both adult wolves in the targeted Lookout Mountain pack have radio collars, so the rancher will be targeting the pups instead. Fish and Wildlife spokesperson Michelle Dennehy said the state has documented nine pups born in the pack northeast of the eastern Oregon town of Durkee in the last year.
COVID-19 is underscoring the importance of ensuring that people's estates are in order, but estate planning can be tricky for tribal members. That's why Montana Legal Services Association and the Indian Land Tenure Foundation have partnered to develop a do-it-yourself online form. Many tribal members own land through a trust in which the legal title is held by the U.S. government. But Catherine Seaton, a Montana Legal Services Association staff attorney who heads the Indian Wills program, says over time, owners of these trust lands have grown into hundreds or thousands, making it hard to use the land. She says the problem is that when people die without a will, the land is split evenly among heirs.
It's important for tribal members to have wills so they can determine what happens with their tribal trust land and to ensure that it's going to go to who they want it to go to and to not continue to fractionate interest into smaller and smaller portions.
The Indian Will in a Box is a free online form to help Native Americans draft their wills and determine what will happen to their estates. Seaton says the program has come out at the perfect time, since services have moved online over the past year to prevent the spread of COVID-19. She says the form gives helpful information as folks fill it out.
The form itself also provides little help pop-ups that give definitions so people can just go through, answer all the questions, review all of the information that's contained in the form, and then get their document at the end. It will create the document for them.
Seaton says remote services are hard to provide in tribal communities.
There can be a lack of access to just simply broadband service or internet service or even phone service, access to computers, access to smartphones, etc. So that's always a barrier.
She says her organization is considering ways to bring internet access to these communities. Seaton adds that it's been hard to get documents remotely notarized because people often need a credit history for these services. Montana Legal Services Association is a nonprofit that provides civil legal aid to low-income folks. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Moscow City Council will hold public hearings tonight on the proposed $102.4 million fiscal year 2022 city budget and on selling the police station to the University of Idaho. The city's proposed budget for the 2022 fiscal year, which starts October 1st, includes a 3% increase in the property tax levy to $5.08 per $1,000 in assessed value. 90% of the new construction valuations will be added to the tax rolls. The other public hearing is on selling the current police station building at Washington and East 4th Street to the University of Idaho for $875,000. The university wants to use the 9,000 square foot building for a new Pritchard Art Gallery and Vandal store, and hopes to catch business from travelers passing through town on U.S. Highway 95 North, which doubles as Washington Street through downtown. The city is building a new police station on the south side of the city at South Main and Southview Drive, which will be ready by October. City voters approved the $10.8 million bond in 2019 to build the new police station and to use the current police station for city offices. But in June of last year, the city purchased the Haddock building at 5th and Washington Streets for the offices, which city officials say will result in substantial savings over estimated remodel costs to turn the current police station into offices. The UI has leased a space at 5th and Main downtown for the Pritchard Art Gallery for decades, but university officials say they want to own instead of continuing to lease. The council will also vote on approving a lot division on a 24,325-square-foot parcel owned by Wesley Michaels at 2209 Shelby Lane. The Moscow City Council meets at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has issued a heat advisory for eastern and central Washington and northern and north central Idaho that will be in effect from 11 a.m. tomorrow until 11 p.m. Wednesday. Dangerously hot conditions with afternoon temperatures in the upper 90s to 105 degrees possible. Extreme heat combined with unusually warm overnight temperatures will significantly increase the potential for heat-related illnesses. Conditions will be difficult for residents without air conditioners. Those working or participating in outdoor activities will also be vulnerable. Wildfire smoke in the region could reduce afternoon temperatures, reducing the risk of extreme heat. The amount of wildfire activity and subsequent smoke in the region will play a role in how hot the temperatures are Tuesday and Wednesday. Monitor the latest forecasts and warnings for updates. Be prepared to drink plenty of fluids. Stay in an air-conditioned room. Stay out of the sun and check up on relatives and neighbors. Young children and pets should never be left unattended and in vehicles under any circumstances. This is especially true during warm or hot weather when car interiors can reach lethal temperatures in a matter of minutes. The Idaho Department of Environmental Quality offices in Coeur d'Alene and Lewiston have issued an air pollution forecast and caution for all of northern and north central Idaho because of degraded air quality. Health impacts may occur. Burning restrictions are in effect. Air quality is forecast to remain in the moderate to unhealthy categories due to regional wildfire activity. The pollutant of concern is fine particulate matter, PM2.5. The next update will be Wednesday. When air quality is unhealthy for sensitive groups, sensitive persons, those with heart and lung disease, children, and older adults may experience health effects and should limit prolonged or heavy exertion and limit time spent outdoors. Outdoor burning restrictions. All outdoor burning is prohibited. For more information on burning restrictions, you can call the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality's regional office in Lewiston at 208-799-4370. That's 208-799-4370. Or the Coeur d'Alene office is 208-769-1422. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for areas of smoke and widespread haze tonight, mostly clear, low 59. Areas of smoke before noon tomorrow, otherwise widespread haze, sunny and hot, high 96. Widespread haze before 8 p.m. on Tuesday night, partly cloudy, low 61. Widespread haze Wednesday, sunny and hot, high 96. 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight Wednesday night. Then a chance of rain after midnight, widespread haze before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 61. And on Thursday, a 40% chance of showers, mainly after noon, partly sunny, high 86. Currently 88 degrees. The Idaho Department of Environmental Quality real-time air monitoring map shows the air quality at this hour in Moscow is unhealthy for sensitive groups. The air quality in Lewiston is moderate. Air quality in Lapway, Kamiai, and Greensville is unhealthy for sensitive groups. In Potlatch and Julietta, moderate. And then Plummer and Points North, including Coeur d'Alene and Sandpoint, it's rated as unhealthy at this hour. The Washington Department of Ecology real-time air monitoring shows the air quality at this hour in Pullman and Clarkston is unhealthy. There's also many unhealthy readings across southeastern and south central Washington at this hour, and the air quality is dirtier to the north, including Steptoe, Spokane, Newport, Wilpinit, and Colville, where the air quality is rated as very unhealthy. It's hazardous in OMAC. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'll repeat that address in a moment again. You can also go to the KRFP website where there's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There's You can find out how to underwrite programming to let our listeners know your business supports community radio in a cost-effective way. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Coming up, we have Eat the Airwaves Part 2, normally heard around 6 o'clock on Monday. We're running about a half hour late tonight, and we'll have Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, in the 7 to 8 slot tonight, and normally runs around 6:30. And then around 8 o'clock, we'll have music throughout the evening, including Chia Pet on the air 9 to 11 tonight. Stay tuned for more. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by Buy Local Moscow, representing Moscow's independent business community and helping to strengthen Moscow's economy. On the web at www.buylocalmoscow.com. KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.